Welcome back to Series 2 of Have a Chat. Today's guest, Nathan Brown. He shares his journey through mental health and how he's come through the other side.
With going overseas too, and foreign country, and then not having the, you know, contacts of what you had back here would be tricky as well, wouldn't it? In the sense of not finding that community vibe.
Yeah, for sure. And that, I think it was kind of like a big part of the issues I found myself into. It was kind of a big part of my battle was loneliness and, you know, not having a big group of people outside of my work to kind of connect with, and sport has always been such a huge part of my life, and then all of a sudden it just wasn't, and my soccer team went on and won the premiership the pricks don't even need me, and then
I was a star player.
It was funny, I came back like in August 2019, August 2019.
Yeah.
So I've been away for 5 years, and it just happened to be semi-final and final of soccer season.
Good timing.
And Rob Pisto, who took over the reins of this team, he's like, "Brownie, can you come and be the coach again? Sign me up." And it was just such a blast. And they ended up winning the comp. And
I see you're part of it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I was last man standing at Mad Monday. I had a reputation to uphold. So but it was just good. And I thought, you know, when I was listening to a few of your potties, and there is a big kind of sports influence throughout everything you've kind of done.
Yeah, it sort of has. Majority of them have. Yeah. Like, had a few different people, but also like a doctor and a physio and different other types of business coaches. But I think a lot of it relates back to sport or that community vibe. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I've even had that Bob Cam Ryan, actually. We're talking in Dubbo early. He's an old Dubbo boy, Bulldogs player too. So, and he was an interesting guest to have on because of talking about the transition.
Yep.
You know, like, can be through school to adulthood, from relationships, from career-wise, also, you know, after professional sport, but it doesn't always have to be a sporting career transition. So
it's the same. I think that's what you were talking to Mitch about, that, how he just had his dreams just taken away from him.
Yeah, it's out of your hands. Three knee recos, you know what I mean?
And he still thinks about it to this day.
It's And I know Mitch, and he's always trying to find challenges to challenge himself. You know what I mean? Because I think once you get to a competitive level,
you need to find that competitive.
Yeah,
you need to use that competitive urge somehow
in a healthy way too. Not get so caught up and, you know, drowns you and takes control of you. But you're in control of it. But finding the right paths to help you, you know, release that, but also to execute what you're, what you've got within you.
I think that's a big part of what you and kind of Mitch Woods do, and your kind of your mentor, life coaching type role, right? And I think you and Mitch said it in the podcast that I just listened to. It's like, this is, you don't have to be an elite sports person or a lover of sports. Like, all of this works for the corporate world and everyday world, teenagers.
Definitely.
And same with Rob Pisto, saying like, you're 14, you can be 14 or 64, you get the exact same benefits of doing this stuff.
100%.
Whether it be meditation in the gym or just kind of stopping and breathing. I think that was one of the things you were saying in that most recent one. Stop.
I think that sometimes we forget to stop. You know what I mean? And I was a culprit of it, and I'm still am, but I'm a lot better in the way of being aware of it consciously now to then tell myself, okay, let's stop now and slow down and then take a few deep breaths or just reflect and sit in stillness or quietness or just and then go again, because it's sort of recharging you as well.
Yeah,
and I remember we did a course together not long ago with Mitch Woods, you know, meditation, and I brought up as well, like, with the meditation side of things, you know, we meditate in the morning, which is amazing, but even sometimes that afternoon meditation, it's like the reboost to really pick you up and to bring you back to a bit more of a, you know, stable base, and then you can then recharge and go again. So
I think, like I said, like, we, that's how our paths crossed in October, doing Woodsy's meditation course. And I think, I mean, I've stopped counting, but I think I'm like 100 days in a row of meditation. Awesome. So I've missed one day at the very start, and I've meditated. And I've kind of watched myself evolve as a meditator, like, in the early, because I did the second 6 week course as well. So we did the first 6 week course together, and I was kind of really using the meditation to kind of combat issues. Like, I was kind of reacting to a situation and then using the meditation. But now it's like the first thing I do when I wake up, and I did like 15 minutes this morning, and then I just did a little 8 minute one just ahead of this, just kind of clear the mind and just be ready. And just like you were saying, like it shuts everything off out, and then all of a sudden you're amped up depending on what you're doing. And that's so I set myself a goal to, you know, try and do 15 minutes a day this every day this year. And I'm like, it's only 2 weeks in, but I'm doing 18 minutes a day. So I'm a big stats man. So I've got it all in my phone. So perfect.
Well, if that's what works for you, that's ideal. You know what I mean? Everyone has different ways, which, you know, keeps them aligned or focused to what they're doing. So if it's the numbers and the stats, we'll keep using it as, you know, as that guide to help you on that journey. And it's you don't want to create the extra pressure as well of like, I need to do it. But once you start doing it regularly, you don't, you find the benefits, and you're like, well, no, if I don't do it, I'm worse off.
Yeah.
Rather than
I think I think we're going to go into a bit more of my story, but I've never healthy habits have never, like, I've always done the bad things really well. I do every bad thing to the extreme, to excess. Like I work in action sports, but I've just led a like fifth pin lifestyle, like just all the time, no stopping. So I'd heard about meditating a few times throughout our podcast. Yep. A few guests had recommended it, and I was like, fuck, I'm just going to give this a go. And my big problem is I've never been able to sit still. I've got bad ADHD, so I'm 0 or 100. There's kind of nowhere in between. And I'm only 0 when I'm sleeping, and I don't sleep very well or very often. Yep. So it's like, just the torque in my body motor is just always just wide open.
Yeah, revving so high.
Like I need to go to the mechanic every week type thing. And the meditation has just given me such a brilliant, brilliant tool. And now it's like it's just part of my life now. Yeah. It's not like I still don't enjoy going to the gym. Like I know what the benefits are, and I know I'm gonna feel great afterwards. Yeah. It's still a chore to me. Yeah. It's still something that I don't enjoy.
Well, there's no point of doing it yet anyway. It's better to do something what you're going to get enjoyment out of, and you'll create it as a healthy habit too, because, you know, we talk about the old bad habits and going to the extremes with that. Yeah, they're sometimes easy, and you just keep snowballing into that.
Yeah.
Where if you're creating new habits and you want to implement new healthy ones, start really with small steps and things that what actually are going to motivate you. Because if you're not motivated at the start, how are you going to be motivated at the end?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's about like, well, if the gym's not for you, that's fine. But if it's about going for a walk, if it's about just meditating and doing a 10-minute walk around the beach, you know, or doing whatever, or jumping on a pushy.
Walking's my thing.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's as beneficial as going to the gym if you're at that stage and that's where you're at as well. So
I think I can't remember if it was either you or Nick Harris in the first meditation course said something that really stuck with me. It was just like, because you guys are both fit, healthy guys. I can't remember who said it. And he said, I'm here because I'm just adding another tool to my belt of kind of like mindfulness and looking after myself, just another tool to be a better version of myself. Yeah. And that was what the meditation course did for me. So, and since then I joined the second one. Mitch had me on again. I did the mental health first aid course with
Steve Mananker.
Yeah, Steve Gamble. He's a fucking legend as well. So it's just been nice getting in this space kind of over the past, you know, 10 months. By the looks of it, our podcast started at almost the exact same time.
I think it was April or something,
COVID time.
And I've had heaps of fun getting people on, and the reason why I started it was because to sort of hear people's stories. I've always been inquisitive in listening and hearing people, and I think that's why I'm in the line of work with the coaching as well. It's about helping people, but also just being there to listen and hear, and if I can help in some way, that's amazing. But I think also now with the podcast, people can listen, and it's interesting the feedback you get from different people and the different guests you get on and their group or a group of circles, but someone outside that. Oh, it was really interesting hearing his story. I didn't know he or she was experiencing that or did that. And so it also gives permission for other people to maybe speak out. And I think we'll go into that now, because I know that you've got a great story to share, and I think it's great to hear and all that. But if we could start off with maybe you just giving a little bit of background of who Nathan Brown is. And what, you know, and what you've been up to.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm obviously Nathan Brown, 38 years old, Northern Beaches, born and bred. I am lover of sport and kind of lover of the fifth pin lifestyle. I've worked in the action sports industry for the kind of last 16 years now. over a cup, same company for 17 years on January 27th. It is.
Wow,
17
congratulations.
Years. Yeah, I don't
know. Is that something you've always been passionate about? Or
yeah, so I probably should take a step back. I finished school at Cromer High, Cromer Jail in 1999.
The locals will know about that.
The locals will know about it. I'm talking to a posh-ass Riverview boy here. So I finished school in 99.
No judgment.
And kind of not too dissimilar to you, sport was always my thing.
Yeah.
And I definitely wasn't an elite sportsman, but I love sport, mainly team sport. And if they handed out gold medals for watching sport and sports trivia, I'd be on the podium.
Yeah.
I'd be on the podium. I've only met a couple people in my life that know more about sport than me, and they work for Fox Sports and SEN. So
they're around at 24/7.
Yeah, so they're around. It's their job. And because I didn't do too well at school, I just started looking for work out of school, and I ended up working in Tradelink Plumbing Supplies. And for 3 years,
in Monavale,
Brookvale, Sydenham Road, Brookvale, around the corner from some naughty places. And is this PG?
Yeah, it's whatever you want it to be. People will know what you're talking about. Or some will.
Any Northern Beaches male under the age of 40 or over the age of 40.
Over the age, yeah. Oh, it could be a few unders,
Anyway, so so I hated going to work every single day, and then I had a work accident. A big hot water service fell on me and tore all my ankle ligaments.
Yeah.
And it turned into a kind of 6-month fight with them because I couldn't wear safety boots anymore. And they eventually fired me in July 2003-ish, I think it was. And so they fired me, and I ended up suing them for unfair dismissal. And I had this big chunk of money, in my pocket, but I had no direction on what I wanted to do. I was 20. I was 21 years old, and I was ready just to piss this whole money out. I thought I was going to be a king for 2 years and just not worry about it. And my dad, it's the best advice, best life advice I've ever given. My dad's like, I'm taking this money off you. You love sport. Let's find a way to get you into sport. He did all the research, and still to this day, I'm the eldest of four. He'll do all the research for all of his kids. He just loves, like, if they want to buy a car, a holiday. He just loves it. I think that's where I get my obsession with numbers from.
Yep.
And he said, listen, I've found you this course, this 1-year advanced diploma in sports management out at Parramatta. It's super expensive, but you've got all this money. Just let's do it. You're doing it. And
wow, what a good dad.
What like, a great right, dad. Yeah. So we pay for this money. I'm like, fuck, I've got to go to Parramatta every day. And so he's like, you've got a bit of money left.
Get a car.
Dad, you're onto something here.
You're an ideas man.
Yeah, seriously. And unfortunately, the first week in Parramatta, I ran my car up the arse, and I ended up on Vic LaRusso's
report.
Parramatta Road. I rammed up the back of one person that went through. So I ended up having to bus and train to Parramatta 3 days a week, and I was watching my kind of attendance record. I had to get 80% attendance record to pass, and the final half of the year, you had to do a 3-month work placement.
Oh.
And I managed. I can't even remember how I did it, but I ended up scoring a work placement at the New South Wales Rugby League.
Oh.
Down at Narrabeen.
So I was one of your dream jobs.
Yeah, so I was living in Colorado Plateau. So then I only had to bus it to Narrabeen and walk up the Wakehurst Parkway.
Easy.
But it was like, I couldn't believe it. I love rugby league. Yeah. We were talking before we went on air. Like, if I could choose one sport to watch the rest of my life, it's Manly and NRL.
Yeah. So you're in the Manly area.
In the Manly area.
Training area.
So it was before it was their base, but it was like New South Wales Rugby League. Taz Battiri was my boss.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's a great man. Like, I think he's the head of in the International Rugby League now. So I actually, one of the jobs I did there was I created the draw for the 2006 or 7 Rugby League World Cup when that first time when they got the Tier 1 and Tier 2 nations. So I was good with the numbers. I built this manifest of what this Rugby League World Cup draw could look like. And they ended up using it. I think it was... might have been that World Cup when New Zealand upset Australia right at the end.
Was it 06 or?
Yeah, it was around that time.
Yeah.
Don't fact check here because I don't fact check.
Yeah, perfect.
It got to 3 months and they were about to the work thing was over, and I was like, can I just stay on till the end of the year? So I ended up doing, so I was doing 3 days a week at the out at Parramatta, well, 2.5. Yeah. I was like, just, I was kind of wagging every one day just a fortnight, just getting the 80% up. But I was first in, last out to the New South Wales Rugby League. It was just 1 day a week, and I was going out to all the school stuff. Yeah. And
so you already knew straight away that was more motivating for you.
Yeah, and I loved it. Like that's you know, and like you find a job you love, and you never work a day in your life, whatever they say. Yeah. And so it got to the end of this. Got to the end of the school year, December, and I'd finished the course, got my advanced diploma, and then basically New South Wales Rugby League shut up shop for the school holidays. I'm like, I'm coming back, like I'm ready to come back on February 1st. There was no full time job on offer. Yeah. I'm like, I'll come back. I'll just
free voluntary work.
Voluntary work. Yeah. Like I'm an intern essentially, and because I just knew the job was going to be there, and I was impressing the right people, and I just knew. And then got to like January 20th, and they're like, one of the guys called me, he's like, listen, mate, I just don't think we can get you any work at the moment, so you should just look for a proper job.
Yeah.
And then by chance, a job turned up in the Manly Daily, back when you had to go into the back of the Manly Daily. Yeah, you know?
Do you look at the job section?
Yeah, seriously.
And I don't do that anymore, do
you? No, I don't think so. Yeah. I've looked for a job for 17 years. Yeah. I haven't fucking clue.
Only LinkedIn. 5 years ago. LinkedIn.
Yeah, and there was a job at Krusty Demons Clothing, which is Krusty Demons is kind of dirt bikes and action sports.
Extreme,
yeah. And the job was for a stock controller to the clothing line. So, and I had been the stock controller of the plumbing supplies at Trailing. So, I was responsible for all the product in the shop. So, I knew, again, another numbers-related job. So, I ended up getting this job.
And where was that located?
Mona Vale.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, by this stage, I had another car.
Yeah. Didn't crash yourself.
Yeah, I was in Narrabeen and working in Mona Vale. So, this is like, I know the day I started, January 27, 2005, because it was the first Australia Day I didn't drink.
Because
it was like my first day of this new job. So it was a sliding doors moment because I thought I was destined to work in rugby league, and in a lot of ways I still think that is my destiny at some point. But this part-time job in the clothing label turned into kind of this marketing job, which again wasn't really my thing.
Mm.
And I just kind of fell in love. I just love like this whole vibe of this action sports company, and then it kind of manifested in we promoted the Australian Supercross, which is dirt bike racing, and then it manifested into Nitro Circus in 2009. And you know, fast forward 12 plus years, January 12, 2021, and I lived overseas for 5 years. The company relocated to Southern California.
Based over there,
yeah. So we got bought out by a big investment group in. When was that? End of 2013, early 2014. Yep. So I packed up my stuff in August 2014 and moved to California, kind of not really knowing anything about anything. At the time, I had an American partner, but otherwise I was
Which you met in Australia?
Met on the tour.
On the tour, okay.
Long gone now, thank fuck. And
got away. The one,
I shouldn't say that. So I moved over there, not really knowing, but just kind of really excited for the adventure.
Okay. So you weren't too hesitant. You're sort of like when the opportunity came up and you knew that it was you were going over.
Yeah, I don't think there was any reservations. Yep. I think it was good because there was about 12 of us doing it.
Okay.
So we were just a tiny little company on the Northern Beaches. Yeah. About 12 of us went over there, and then the rest of the company was filled out by Americans, and all of a sudden there was like 80 people working in this 12-person company within 12 months, and it was a culture shock. And I think it was at times a difficult transition for me. But
it was, or it wasn't?
Yeah, it was. Just because so many of my best friends are Americans, but like the American culture is still very different, especially for a loud, obnoxious Australian. And when you look at the loud, obnoxious Australians, I'm like pretty high on that scale. Yeah. So, but it was a great time and work because I toured the world. I would get back to Australia a couple of times a year with work. Yeah. You know?
So you sort of were based in South California, but you sort of were traveling most of the time, so you weren't really there for a long period of time. Yeah,
I think 2017 was the record where we spent 192 days in hotels. So that was, you were never really anywhere for too long. I think the longer, in 5 years, I think the longest I was not in Australia for was something like 6 months. So I was lucky. I never really got homesick, but then, you know, it didn't end too well for me, and that's kind of the story. I think that's the story of my story, really, is kind of.
And that's where I'd like to lead to. So now traveling, and if you use that 2017, 192 days on the road, that's a long time. And not to have the stability of like a set base and where you can sort of build some structures and all that around to help yourself in ways.
Yep.
When was the turning point? Because if the listeners aren't aware, you suffered depression. Yeah. And you've been through that whole process.
Yeah.
And you're now open to speak about it all and want to share your story. So can you give us a little bit of insight of how this all came about? And
I think probably in about, I guess it was about mid-2018 for me. Early 2018, it really started to kind of unravel for me, like a relationship breakdown.
Yeah. So was that probably the start of it?
There was issues at work as well. I think it was probably twofold. And then the bigger problem with it all was just kind of not addressing any of it. I think that was the major problem with it all. It was kind of, self-medicating with, drugs and alcohol was a big issue for me. And just hiding from the truth, really.
Being in denial and just suppressing your emotions and not expressing yourself.
Yeah, and, with the benefit of hindsight, I can sit back now and pick apart all the times where I went left when I should have went right.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what encouraged me eventually to come out and tell the story. Our podcast kind of did that, but in a lot of ways I was kind of well on the way on the healing process. Like I got back, I think my darkest times were like in June and July 2019, when it was like, that were the two times where I was like, I was done with life. And I hadn't written the suicide note or anything like that, but I kind of thought about the timings of when and how and where. And, I just had this, I'm a really good writer, but more kind of comedic. So I really think about stuff. Like I've hosted a lot of weddings and done some best man speeches. So I'm pretty, I take pride in my kind of writing. Yes. So a lot of it's humor based.
Yeah. Well, I read that, the document you sent me, and it is quite insightful and, insightful was a really thing, and it took me back a little bit, but getting amongst that, your journey. You take people on a journey. That's what I liked it. Yeah, that's probably what I'm trying. But in a good way, where you sort of, you can feel you're going into it, but it's also giving permission for you to just listen and read it as well.
Yeah. And so that letter that I sent you, which is kind of the battle, Brown versus the Black, the Brown Dog versus the Black Dog, or whatever is the working title for it.
Yeah.
I actually wrote that in February, March last year, and I just started writing it before my best mate Luke approached me about the Skip This podcast. Yeah. And then when he said that and said it's going to be a mental health podcast, I probably need to write a bit more. And before I start talking about it, I wanted to kind of put pen to paper.
Yeah.
And it was, and I had to show my mum and dad, and I'm the oldest of four kids, two sisters and a brother. And at that point, I wasn't going to talk about suicide, like only my psychologist. That's why suicide's not mentioned in that 23 pages or whatever it is. And at that point, I just thought, you know what, I think, I don't know if I feel 100% comfortable with that, but I feel comfortable about everything else.
Yeah.
So that was the letter I gave to my parents and said, hey, like, are you okay? Are you guys okay with this? And the support from them was kind of overwhelming. So I knew I was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And then there was kind of a couple of other big breaths when we recorded episode two, which is kind of deep dive with Brownie. I was like, right till the very end, I still wasn't 100% sure. And I sent the link to my parents and my siblings and just said, hey, what, give us an honest take on this. Like, is this going to like ostracize me? Is this going to make you guys feel uncomfortable? Yeah. And then like within seconds, it was like you have to tell this story. And then so it was like, bang, like I think the podcast for us, Skip This Podcast, started as a very self-serving tool. And then kind of I think what you were saying earlier is like all of a sudden though, you've just realized how many people you're touching and how many people are going through the same stuff is kind of what the thing that really is the thing that probably blew me away the most, like people so close to me that I had no idea. But it does make sense because no one had any idea about my struggles because I was lucky. I was able to really, because most of my struggles were in America, I was able to just kind of like, instead of a Skype with mum and dad, it'd be a phone call and I can fake it till I make it for 10 minutes.
We're good at play scripting and faking things. Yep. And we learn great strategies to do that all the time. And that's how we create bad habits and that's how we get into, you know, negative train of thoughts and negative mindsets because we're very good at, you know, deterring from the truth or hiding from the truth. And when we do have to then come out and express ourselves, that's when it comes even scarier because it's more what we're aligning to.
Yeah.
It's interesting when you, with the podcast, when you said the first two getting like, or it sort of sounds like you're hearing the permission from your family that it's okay.
Yeah.
It was like the stepping stone for you to then be able to open up. And then when you're saying that now people coming out after listening to you're giving them permission now to speak up as well. Yeah. I think that's a big message around, you know, suicide, depression, you know, anxiety, all these things people are creating.
Yeah.
You know, you're not alone. And I feel like a lot of the time we feel like we're alone because we're suffering so much internally and we don't know how to deal with it externally or how to speak to someone as well.
And I'm so lucky now I don't suffer from those things now because, like, if I'm not really feeling it, I can just, like, one of my classic signs was like I just would not answer my phone, wouldn't respond. Like, my phone is 5 foot away, and that's about as far as my phone ever gets.
You've always got it.
I'm always available. It's kind of ingrained for me from working, like, got a first generation BlackBerry because we were working up with overseas people, so you always had to be alert.
Yeah,
and that that's a bad habit, and then, of course, it turned into an even worst habit with your kind of social life, social media and everything else. No doubt about it. But long story long is something was up if I wasn't taking
it's,
your call.
It's odd if you were taking it when you've had it in front of you the whole time.
So now I can just say with those moments, listen, I just don't want to talk. Yeah. So I can say that now. And one of the things I said early on was like, you know, your mind, your mental health is under lock and key and only you – you're the only person who has the key to that lock.
100%.
But if you open up about it, all of a sudden, all of those close to you now have a copy of that key. And now that you can't get those keys back now, so it's like now my mum's just like, Nate, you're off. You're a little bit off today. And he's like, you know what? I'm having a shit day. Yeah. Like, it's cool. Like, you can just say.
But you own it and you're happy to.
Yeah, you absolutely own it. And then, like, I just felt when that episode went to air in, you know, I think end of March last year, the biggest weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders. And I think that was really, that was the start of my really kind of final chapter, I think, of my healing process. Yeah. Like when I got back in August in 2019, I just thought that was the magic wand and I'd be fixed. I just thought that was
different country, different environment. I'm back at home.
Back at mum and dad's spare room. And actually, in the second week, I think it was, like I kind of didn't even tell my friends I was home. I just needed to bunker down.
Yeah.
And the second week I was home, I just remember I was on the end of mum and dad's spare bed just crying uncontrollably. I didn't even know I was crying. And my mum's like, what help? She was helpless. And, you know, there's no worse feeling in the world than seeing your mum helpless.
Yeah, as
they,
a parent,
always,
yeah.
they always know how to help. And and she's like, we're going to find you the right side. Because I'd seen two psychologists in America and I just thought it was just bullshit.
Yeah.
And I think that was, again, now looking back at it, I can say that was part of the denial and, you know, not accepting the kind of...
I'd say a couple of things. Yeah, denial because you probably weren't ready and you have to be ready, I think, in that process to then start the work. You might not have the answers, but to be able just to acknowledge within yourself that you're ready. So you might not have been ready, like you're saying.
Yeah.
But also it's the right fit for you as well with the coach, the psychologist, whatever you're dealing with.
Yeah.
You have to have that relationship as well where you feel comfortable, vice versa.
Yeah.
And you can then sort of let your guard down and the walls around you because we build these walls and we just keep closing yourself off and off and off
your whole life, right?
Yeah, and then so and we and as a young kid, parents try to help to protect us by putting good coping mechanisms in and sort of not being put out there to be too vulnerable at a risk of, you know, being, you know, embarrassed or being, you know, left out there. So we use them at a young age to sort of, you know, protect ourselves. But then when we get to adulthood, we're still using them, but they're outdated.
Yeah.
And they're actually not serving us. They're actually holding us or jeopardizing and creating a stronger barrier around us where we're not able to be free and expressive and vulnerable and grow from those opportunities. Yeah.
So she got me in to see a psychologist, Dr. Gunter Svoboda, who's probably one of the most important figures in my kind of, you know, like last 12 months, 15 month journey now, whatever it
from
is.
From that moment.
From that moment, I saw him like, I think it was like, took a while to get him. So it was like November 2019. And he was one of the ones, like, he was one of the first people, because he's a published author, podcaster. He's like, just start writing stuff down. Yeah. And eventually you're gonna want to tell this story publicly, like not publicly, but to your family and friends.
Close friends and family.
And I'm like, yeah, mate, I'm just not gonna do that. Mm. You know, I'm just gonna keep doing what I'm doing. I like chatting to you. I'll see you once a week.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I did the podcast kind of concept came up on the back of COVID. Me and my best mate Luke, the co-host, both in he works in live sport as well, so kind of behind the scenes in production. And so all of a sudden we had no work. We were kind of, I was pulled from a tour. I was in Adelaide when we watched that press conference saying events are being shut down. And at that point you knew it was pretty grim. Like we had 39 shows slated for 2020 across the world. And we did three. We did Ballarat, Wangaratta and Adelaide. And we haven't done a show since.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was, I know the date, March 14th last year. And so that was when the podcast was born, and that's when I started writing my stuff. And then you know, it just kind of felt time. Everything kind of felt like it was lining up.
Yep.
And once I got mum and dad's kind of approval to do it, and the feedback from the first couple of episodes was just like, it gives me goosebumps talking about it now, because just like not just friends and family, but strangers like inspired, and it was just like, I was like blown away, because like I said, it was very self-serving. It was a time killer for us when we did it, because like we don't know when we're going back to work. And Luke's like he's brilliant tech head, and so I just had to turn up and talk. So I was like, fuck, this is like, I love being give me a microphone, like I love that. And then it just kind of morphed into something way bigger than we expected. And just the kind of list of guests we've had, like my dad was on there talking about the kind of journey as a parent, which is just like,
which would be very insightful as well, because seeing that, and then also as a father, not being able to control they're trying to do their best they can, but it's out of their control. It comes back to, you know, yourself, like you said, the key and all that. And until you're able to unlock it yourself and then to share it, it's really hard for those external ones as well. But it's interesting, even with the, you know, the psychologist or he's telling you to write it down. It's funny, when we get told things to do, we sort of sometimes rebel against it, and we need to do it in our own time as well. And then maybe the pressure or lack of pressure when the podcast came about and you're like, well, I just have to speak.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You sort of didn't have that expectation, no, you know, thoughts around, you know, or, and you just sort of allowed it naturally to flow come out.
Yeah.
And it sort of was able to filter its way out through your time as well.
That's exactly right. And then I think it's like episode 5, again, like I was kind of criminally underprepared for all the first half of the season. I didn't do any notes or anything.
Yeah.
And episode 5 is actually titled Brownie versus Suicide. I had no plans of even talking about that at the time. And then Luke, my best mate on the other end, like we're sitting across the table from him. He's just crying hearing this story. And I'm like, at that point it was verbal diarrhea, because like exactly what you're saying, I've just subconsciously, I guess, I was just ready to tell the story. And then it's just like the amount of people who, like 4 people told me that they like on the verge of suicide.
Had the thought
that were close to me that I would never in a million years. Yeah. And that's what they say, right? Like there's the statistics on suicide are like, they haven't even released the 2020 numbers yet, because unfortunately they're probably still counting them. But in 2019, there's 3,400 people death by suicide. Yeah. 75% of them are males, and I think it's 1,200 people died on their roads. So how are we losing three times the amount of people? Yeah. Like, you can't go anywhere in a car and not see the signs, like traffic lights,
signs, in your face
speed
everywhere.
Cameras, yeah. mobile speed cameras. Yeah. Every ad break, you'll see something speeding. Yeah. You know, you drink driving, whatever it might be. There's so much awareness yeah. around that, but there's just not enough. Like, about, like, no one knows that suicide rate. Like, no. People will be hearing that for the first time on this.
Definitely. And also, if you even nail down, I think even Northern Beaches is even hotter.
Yeah, we're like the number one unfortunately. Like, yeah, we're the best drink drivers and, unfortunately, some of the best suicide.
Yeah.
Best worst. I mean, that's a terrible thing to say.
Yeah, it is terrible. But it's important that people know that too. Yeah. And I think that also comes to, you know, the environment of expectation and trying to compare with the Joneses and everything around.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
We need to sort of maintain this level of, you know, external appearance. But
yeah.
if we're not maintaining the internal
yeah.
environment within us,
yeah.
then something has to give.
Yeah.
We don't want to get to that stage. So
yeah.
since going through this journey and now reflecting back, what would you say some of the key things, moments of, you know, before it came clear to you, the stuff you were experiencing, you know, around the suicidal and the negative thoughts, and what were you doing to deter them to be even expressed out to people around you? And then after the process of what you've explained now, being able yeah. to release it, and what are some of the coping mechanisms or the things you've now implemented which have really helped you grow and develop, you know, as an individual?
Yeah, well, like back in 2018 when I had the kind of two moments where I hadn't written the letter, that I still unfortunately remember like how I was going to start it. Like
yep.
I've kind of unfortunately got a photographic memory. Yeah. I was like, I know the world is not going to be a better place without me, but I know I'm going to be in a better place without the world. That yep. was like the opening line of this letter. And instead of kind of writing anymore, what I do is I just go and get blacked the fuck out.
Yeah.
Enough. So I just go and just absolutely light up. And how I explained it was I was playing Russian roulette with my mental health.
Yeah.
What I would do is I'd go out for 24 hours.
Yeah.
24, like, it could be 8 hours, could be 36 hours.
Yeah.
Then that turns into, you know, you need a 14, 16-hour sleep. So all yep. of a sudden, when I'm really dark, you've got 2 days of absolute – because when I'm drinking, I'm like, life of the party.
Yeah.
I don't have bad thoughts. I'm only a danger to myself, like
yeah.
just a hazard. Like
yeah.
I'm not violent. I'm not emotional. I just love yes. I'm the center yeah. of the loudest person in the room. Every room I would be the loudest person in the room.
Yeah.
That's a blessing and a curse, mainly a curse.
So no, it is a good thing. It's good and bad. You're
yeah.
right. Yeah.
And so what I would do was I would know having that 2 days of not thinking about it, there would be, this is why I call it it was the Russian roulette.
Yeah.
There would be an 80% chance that at the end of that 48 hours, I'd still be feeling shit and,
yep.
and I'd just have to probably go and do that again.
Yep.
And then there'd be a 20.
So you're just topping up on
yeah.
that because you want to avoid
yeah.
the come down to
yeah.
the
yeah.
actual feelings
yeah.
coming through.
Or there'd be a 20% chance that it's just gone. It's just gone. I don't know where the fuck it was going. I have no idea, but
yeah.
those kind of feelings and thoughts were just gone. And then so it was a 28. So you,
oh,
you
wow.
So it was literally.
So you're really literally flicking a coin and
yeah,
playing Russian roulette.
Russian roulette yeah. with like kind of how you're going to feel at the end of this,
yeah.
and obviously like no one needs to be told that this is not that's not sustainable.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of getting worse.
And were you doing a lot of it on your own or with people? Or?
Yeah, I was kind of mixing with a few different crowds, but I was doing a lot of it on my own
yeah.
for sure. And it was kind of easy to do it on
yeah.
my own and then have not too many. Like, there was definitely people in America close to me who were worried. And
yeah.
I would just, you know, smoke and mirrors again. Tell
yeah.
me, everything's fine.
All
everything,
good. Brush it off.
Everything's
yeah.
fine. And then one day it just all became a bit too much. And I was like, the kind of tipping point was I was sick of lying to my mum and dad.
Yeah.
That was probably when I just kind of knew I was doing they didn't know it, but I was
yeah.
doing irreparable damage to them if I kind of let it go any further. So I was like, I want to come home. And like 7 days later, I was at home. And that's why I was saying, like, I thought all the problems
yeah.
would be gone when I got August 6, 2019, when I got back. And then it got worse. And that was kind of the third kind of suicide episode was when I was back in Monavale with
yeah.
mum and dad's. And I was just like, I'm embarrassed. I don't know if I want to kind of tell. I don't want to know if I want to go to the
yeah.
psychologist and doctor and get all medicated up. Like, maybe it is just easier just to leave a letter behind. And then I still don't really know why I didn't do that. I think I probably had a, like most people, you fear what you don't know. I probably had a really strong misconception that suicide was a really cowardly act.
Yeah.
And when I got to those three separate occasions, I was a coward for not doing it, is kind of how I thought. Like that's the bravest thing you could ever do. Like, and there's a cool saying that says like, suicide doesn't end the pain. Suicide just passes the pain onto someone else. And I'd read that after the fact, but I think just with my mum and dad just being there and, you know, being the old support, I just decided to fight. And that was kind of, you know, that was part of the healing process, kind of making some lifestyle changes. It probably still took me 6 months to take even that stuff seriously. Yeah. And, you know, I was kind of pretty broken, and it took a long time to put me back together. And then I think March, when, you know, as kind of COVID happened, it was a real kind of like another fork in the road. I could have gone left or could have gone right.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden the industry I've loved and the work so sort of hard
taken away from
it's you. taken away from all my friends.
Yeah.
Like, you know, football players earn a lot more money than guys on a BMX and a dirt bike.
Yeah.
And we don't have the Rugby League Players Association behind Action Sports. So they're all of a sudden, so there's like 60, 70 people, athletes, and then all the production people, because all of our work are contractors. I'm one of the lucky people who's a full-time employee, one of the minority. And then it was like, that could have gone one or two, that could have gone really poorly for me. And the podcast just popped up at that time. And that got to kind of really just telling people about my struggles openly. And it just kind of kept evolving. And then, you know, I started healing and started making some better decisions. And then I fell in love. And I think that was probably, that was a big moment kind of halfway through last year. You know, I probably thought I was never going to love again, you know.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd been burned a few times and probably done some burning as well. Like I never sit here, I would never say I don't shadow any blame for my previous relationships, like not working out, but
it makes two tingle,
and
then and also, you know, if you weren't in the right mindset, you're attracting the people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it comes to so many different things.
Yeah, you attract what you sow.
100%, you know what I mean? That's the environment you're creating.
So that kind of happened, and then, you know, just keeping on kind of just working myself, and the podcast allowed me to really kind of meet some really inspirational people, and one of them was Gus Wall, and his story was just kind of what he does and how he lost his best mate and what he just decided that was his moment to kind of make a difference.
Yeah.
And we ended up jumping in bed with Gotcha for Life and raising 30 grand with Rob.
Yeah, at the gym, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, at the 9-hour challenge, which I was the MC of. I didn't have to do too much.
Yeah, I saw you on that. I think our gym at the Cube, Brookdale, jumped on
the
board.
Yeah, the boys
at
the Cube. Yeah, so between the Cube, the Tribe, and Fitson raised 30 grand. And that was just such a special feeling. If you had told me 12 months earlier I'd be raising money for a mental health, I would have said, we need to raise money for you. You're mental.
Yeah, right? you got you for life. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. Because you've changed and all that too. So I will touch on the podcast in a minute, but I want to go back to when the feelings, your embarrassment.
Yeah.
What were some of the other things you were probably experiencing?
Yeah, I think
shame.
I think with the benefit of hindsight, it's really, you really, like, it's poor me. Like, you really play the victim. Like, you overanalyze everything. You think everyone's out to get you. Like, I think you read everything wrong.
Yeah.
And you know, you're in this dark spot. So you're kind of like, I had kind of three or four confidants over there in America, and I would just take turns in kind of venting to them. And you just know by the end of it, they're like fucking sick of it. And that's why I had three or four of them.
Yeah.
You have
to have three or four. Yeah. Otherwise, the one person would find you out
straight
away.
And that's it. It's like a couple of times, like a great mate of mine, still one of my best mates.
Yeah.
And he's like, Brownie, like, you fucking shut up. Seriously.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to hear that.
Because you're being then a burden on them as well.
Yeah.
They're like, they don't want you to be a burden, but they're doing as best as you can. And you're just going, and you, because you need to release it or try to deal with it the best way you think is the best way.
And I think, you know, that was happening. And then I was kind of like, I was definitely confrontational at work, and that caused that caused problems.
So was it always like that, or you sort of noticed it creeping in?
Absolutely. Yeah. And like creeping in uncontrollably as well. Yeah. And I think, you know, that was part of my healing process in like January, February 2020 was like, I went and apologized to a bunch of people that I knew I owed apologies to. And I didn't really try to explain myself. Like, this was before the podcast. I didn't really try to, I said, listen, I was out of line. Like, I was battling some stuff, but no excuses. I shouldn't have treated you the way I did. And that was kind of, that was some good closure for me. Yeah. And then again, that was another time where some people unexpectedly said, listen, man, I suffer from chronic crippling anxiety, and then you kind of form a special bond with these people. So that was kind of part of the healing process as well. So I knew work was getting too much, and like I was actually, that one of the final things I didn't work was like chase a guy up the stairs, basically. So I was just infuriated by him, and I was just going to build him. And I don't have a violent bone. I haven't had a fight since I got beaten up in Beacon Hill under 19s, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't thrown a punch in anger for a long time. So
so it came out of nowhere.
Behavioral.
And
it was like it was probably like a 3 or 4 month pretty slippery slope from, you know, just not being, I was felt like I was out of control, like couldn't control my emotions, couldn't control my drinking and drugs.
And were you able to still function at work? Well, like, you know, if you went on these long benders, yes and no.
I mean, I definitely wasn't doing my job to my kind of
potential.
But I mean, I've also kind of like working in the action sports live events industry, like it's kind of ingrained in us. Like we work 20-hour days, have 4 hours sleep, so we're on the road. So we do have a pretty solid work. Again, I'm pretty good at working with a hangover, but I knew I was being lazy, and you know, all that other stuff. And I was avoiding all my friends here at home, here back in Oz. And you know, I was just a kind of like pretty miserable person, and miserable person to be around, which was never me at all. Like I said, I've always been the loudest guy in the room. And the funnest for the most part. And then all of a sudden I just saw it slipping away. And I think that was one of the things I was really not liking who I was. I was almost like I was an outsider watching this transpire before my very eyes. And it was not.
So you're able to see it from a different viewpoint.
Yeah.
It's interesting, like even through studies and all that and through the coaching, you know, you can't really fix a problem at the same level. So until you're able to view it or see it at a different level, you can't really take action.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so maybe was that you know, you're seeing a reflection of yourself from a different perspective and go, wow, like is this where I'm eating?
Yeah. And I don't think if I redid all of that again, I wouldn't do too much for different. I don't think I would have had the tools to do anything different. Like with the benefit of hindsight, like there's one thing like I definitely regretted. I shouldn't have got back on. I came back for Christmas in 2018, and I was meant to fly back and to America because I was like just going to give it another crack. I was single and I just wanted to prove to everyone, but mainly to myself, that I could just go and live over there. I didn't even have a place to live, and when I went back there, I delayed my flight by 2 weeks. So I left mid-January. I should never have got on that flight, and that was probably the only thing that I think I could have changed the whole destiny. And that whole kind of January to August 2019 was kind of when it spiraled out of control. So that's probably.
But then, if you also look back, if that didn't happen, would have it continued on back here?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe that was a reason behind it for you,
for sure,
to be able to.
I've never really thought about it like that.
If you look at it at a different perspective, you know, like. We hindsight's always a great thing, as we always see, and we should have done this and that. But then also, it's probably helped us map and find the road we need to take now, and take a lot of learnings out of it. So if you view it as, well, it wasn't good. It wasn't good for me. It wasn't good for everyone else. But now look where I am, and what was I able to then gain from that to help me to grow and to clear and to identify some underlying issues.
Yeah, I think as well, like, it's helped this kind of the 2020, which is kind of the podcast year, I guess you could probably call it. It's like one of the things I tell people is like the podcast gave my family a WhatsApp group chat. We'd never had one. My brother's an Android user, so we've never had a group chat. when I go around, I see mum and dad like 3 or 4 times a week because they work, live around the corner from where I work. Me and dad hug. We've never hugged, right? Yeah. We've never, ever hugged. And it's just like always hug mum, always kiss mum, but dad's always been a handshake and now we hug. And it's like it's brought our family network so close, but also what I think what it's done to my friendship group as well. It's encouraged a lot of people to kind of speak up and just put their hand up and say, hey, listen, like you, and I don't have the fucking answers, right? Like, I don't sit here pretending to have the answers, but I know what it feels like to say, hey, I am not having very good thoughts at the moment. I know what that's like just to listen. Like, you don't even have to say anything.
That's the thing. Sometimes less is more. Yeah. You know what I mean? And the answers for what I give you or you give me might not relate or be the same type of meaning or perspective what you draw. So sometimes just listening and then hearing people, that can be the biggest thing, you know what I mean? And just allowing them to speak and then ask. And then if they need some guidance or help in something, well, you can ask for that if they would want us to help.
But, and a lot of times they don't want the help. They just want to speak their truth and that's it. And you know, we have random strangers saying thank you. Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure you're the same. It's just been kind of just a truly humbling experience and, you know, kind of excited.
And the people you meet on the way too, who you wouldn't have thought of. You would have been, oh, how? But it's funny, like-minded people and people will come in because you're creating that environment. And what I always like to say to my guests, to my clients or anything, we're a walking advertising board.
Yeah.
If we can start being in control of ourselves internally, it will naturally reflect out and the people they'll just notice, like, you know, they'll pick up on the vibe. They'll pick up on the person and the individual and you'll just attract people, you know. Because they'll be like, oh, no.
Yeah.
But that's fine too. Yeah, it's danger because they might not be ready. Yeah. So, but that's fine. But at least you can, if you are in control and comfortable in what you're doing and living by your values, your beliefs and all that, or to the best of you can at the time, well, that's all you can do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. I think I've learned a lot about life and myself. And, you know, I think that meditation was a big kind of turning point for me, which is right around when I kind of pretty much quit smoking as well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've been drunk once in 3 months as well, so I don't drink a lot anymore.
So
and,
you've gone from drinking excessively and drug use to hardly at all.
So it's been a pretty wild journey, but it's like I said, man, it's just the people we've met. Like, I kind of owe it all to Rob Pisto was first person I told of my struggles when I got, like, outside of my family.
Was my first I ever had on my podcast too. It was pretty rough. I was outside and all, but it just, I'd love to get it back on.
You needed an audio technician for that first
that
one
was shocking. Yeah, but but you know, starting out not really having any idea, I just sort of put it out there, you know what I mean? I didn't really have a background on, you know, audio or anything, but you know, you got to start somewhere. Yeah. But he was like one of the best guests to have on for that because he was supportive. He's always articulate.
He's our kind of our mascot. I'm wearing another fucking sponsor shirt.
Yeah. You've got it all on.
I know. We'll have to say that with a Cube member.
Mate. No, mate, you can say whatever. We're a community. We can support everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, mate, Louis and the boys.
Yeah. No, but Rob, I'd support any day. Yeah. He's a legend. But couple of things. So when you're first going back to psychologists around this space, feeling shame or embarrassment, what how did you overcome that? Because sometimes people would find that too overwhelming and too impacting.
I think going to see him next week, actually, Gunter. Don't see him as much now, like just once a month now. I definitely went there kicking and screaming, and that was more so because I've had two pretty ordinary experiences. Yeah. Like, one guy basically said, mate, you're an alcoholic. Don't worry about your mental state of mind. You've just got to stop drinking. And I was like, mate, nah. And then the other one, it never felt right. Yeah. I went and saw him a couple of times and I kind of lied to my parents about seeing him a couple of other times. I just stopped going.
Yeah.
And you know, I think part of that was probably not being ready as well. So I definitely went reluctantly to Gunter in I think October 2019.
Yeah.
And it just got easier. It gets easier each time. Mm. And then, you know, the last couple I've just bounced in, and I've told him that. I was like, mate, I don't even know what are we going to talk about today. I'm fucking killing it. Yeah. Like, I'm in love. I'm so happy. Like, work's going great. Everything's perfect. Like, and like, well, just hold on, slow down a bit. Just let's chat about it. And what it's like is he's just peeling another layer back.
100%.
Like, he's a friend. Like, we text. He's a great friend now. And my mum, like, Facebook messages him, say, like, you've changed our whole family's life.
Because so it's not just impacted one person. No. It's impacted his whole family and his environment around
him. Yeah. And he's just – and he does that for so many people. Yeah. And he's just – and we had him on as a guest, and that was just, like, empowering. And then he actually – he has his own podcast, Making Good Men Great, which is, like – is produced by an Oscar-winning producer or something in America, so it goes worldwide. So he's a speaker at he's a huge like man in demand, like a powerful man in that space. But also this beautiful like my sister described him before she'd ever seen a photo of him. There's like he sounds like a big hug, and I think that's the best way I've ever heard anyone describe anyone because he is a big hug but he'll also call you out on your bullshit, So it's I think the biggest problem with that is like there's no need like it, that's those four walls, nothing comes out of those four walls.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you want it to come out.
Yeah.
It's a cost issue is what we kind of talked about, and that was something we spoke about with Gus. It's like every Australian on average who sees a psychologist regularly, it takes them six psychologists before they find the one they want.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was lucky. I found it on the third. Yeah. I think Gus found his, which is a chick on the eighth.
Yep.
Eighth attempt, a crazy stat like that. Mm. But how many people just give up after one or two or three, which I can't.
And like you said, you had the two bad experiences. Yeah. You were sort of reluctant to go again, weren't you? So it's so common, you know. So how do you fund that as well?
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're not really buying into it and you're not convinced, then how are you
going to pay? Why are you going to pay $250 for it?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that kind of comes back to what I was saying earlier is like they spend so much money on road rules and drink driving and all these preventative measures to stop people dying on the road. Mm. Why isn't the government spending more money in this where three times as many Australians are dying each year from suicide? Why is this not better funded? Yeah. And I think that's, that's part of kind of Gus's mission with Gotcha for Life is to kind of get to grassroots level because and those things are free and affordable but they have to be paid by someone somehow so it's basically done by fundraising.
Yeah.
So Gus was really inspirational in that way, and I think that kind of really set a fire under our belly to make a difference. We're about to we're doing another fundraiser with Rob in March. Yep. With don't think I'm allowed.
Is that walk one?
Oh, no. Yeah, Loop the Lake.
Oh, okay.
It's not. Yeah, it's not announced yet, but okay. I think it is. But spoiler alert. I think he's announcing it Friday. So, okay.
Yeah. This won't go out before that. So it's
perfect. Yeah. Oh, mate, you're not producing this straight away?
No, it's not live. Sorry. Shit, shouldn't have said that. Nah. But Gus is doing great works in that space.
Yeah.
Got You for Life and all that, and the crew around him and all that, and then all the groups outside that who are linked to Got You for Life.
Tomorrow Man, Anchor,
they're all, everyone's linked in their way. The community, even Rob, what he's doing, at the gym and all that too. So
that's it. Same dad, different mummy for all those.
Well, that's it.
All those places. They're all doing the best work. And most of them, like Steve Gamble from Man Anchor, mate, he hasn't pulled a cent. Like he does all of it in his spare time.
Yeah,
it's just like, I mean,
he works hard. I've been to a couple of things where he's spoken as well.
And he's brilliant. That's like I said. I did the mental health first aid course with him, and it was just like that beautiful beard. It was just like it's got
long hair now. Too, doesn't it?
Moses.
He's really. He's doing really great things, mate. I want to talk about, so you've mentioned the podcast. Do you want to give the listeners a little bit more insight about the podcast? You've mentioned how it started.
Yeah.
What's the next journey within that podcast and all that?
Yeah, too. So Skip This Podcast, me and my best mate Luke started it out of COVID in March. We did 25 episodes.
Yep.
Think, what are you doing in your first season?
We're
coming for you. You're going to come on ours. So, yeah, we're recording our first one next week. We took a month off, basically. We kind of shut it down because it is hard work. It's like,
definitely.
Like, it's definitely like super rewarding, but you're not like, you're not getting any financial so you, but you're investing a lot of your time in it, and it's really exhausting after the fact, especially kind of our Skip This podcast. We kind of, the plan initially was that we were just going to tell our stories, and then kind of like what your one is, is just have other people's stories. And then it ended up kind of being intertwined more about my journey as I kind of developed. And, you know, that's why we got Mitch Woods as a guest, because I did his meditation. Steve from Man Anchor is going to be one of our first guests this year. My dad, Gunter, the psychologist. And it's just kind of, you know, a couple of other friends, but then also a couple of people that we hadn't met as well, which were just cool. The last episode we did was with Hugo Tuvey, who's a double cancer survivor, army guy who lost a testicle and half his one nut and half a gut is his kind of 25 and stay alive. Like, just guy we never met, and it was just unbelievable. But then the guest before that was our Nitro Circus security guard, Matty Morris, who basically pulled me out of my kind of suicidal thing in July when we're in Butlins in the UK, which in the middle of
middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere. So it's just a kind of, I think it's very raw and honest. Luke's brilliant. He does kind of all the organizing. He does all the behind the scenes, and then I just kind of I just be me, and then it's just a lot of fun. It's really rewarding, and it's like I said earlier, it was very self-serving to begin with. We were doing it for our own peace of mind, but it grew into something much larger than that, and helped open up some topics that are really uncomfortable to talk about. And it's still uncomfortable for me. Like, I don't sit here and enjoy talking about wanting to kill myself in July 2018. It's horrible to talk about, but it does get easier.
Yes.
And once it becomes public knowledge and consumption, or your friend circle or your family, like I just did it in a really unique way. If I can announce it to the world, you don't have to do that.
You do it whatever's right for you and the best way you feel is right. And you know, like you said, you found a way by just getting on a podcast and just chatting about it. You know, with a best mate, it probably a really comfortable environment, not thinking about where it's going.
Yeah, well, that's happening. When we were trying to name it at the start, one of the taglines we had was like the pub conversations you should be having.
Yes,
and it's like you shouldn't be talking about sport. You should be talking about
pub talk. Mental health.
You should be talking about how your wife's going at home. Yeah. Postnatal depression. Oh shit, I didn't even know that was happening. And that was like one of the guests we had is we went through. Postnatal and whatever the man's version of that is, I should know that. Sorry, Chris, but just awful experience that's happening at your next door neighbor's doorstep, and you should know, but you don't know because they don't want to burden everyone. But Gus Wallen, the best thing I've heard on the podcast last year was Gus's line: "Don't worry alone." Like you tell one person about your worries, and then. You're free.
Yeah.
You're free. You've got someone to talk.
You're giving permission there.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's giving them a copy of that key to your mind. So we're pretty excited just to kind of rip in, and I don't know what the event space looks for us.
Yeah, well, that's still unknown, isn't
it? Yeah, it's still a bit of an unknown, but we've got events planned for like end of the year, but I don't know how well that's, so we're going to kind of work hard on the podcast these next couple of months. And, record a bunch. First one next week with Rob Pisto.
Yeah, perfect.
Perfect. We're going to do the announcement of the big fundraiser that moved the lake.
Don't worry, this won't be leaked before that.
So we'll have to get you down there, mate. 51 kilometres around the lake, I think it is.
Have to get into some training. Yeah, mate. That'd be a bit of fun. I'll get amongst it.
So, man. I think. What about you?
What with my podcast?
Yeah.
At the moment, I'm going back and I'm not doing any new ones yet. I'm recording a few at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and I've got four or five, actually six guests lined up. So I'm just going to get a few
in the can,
sort of do the back work on it. So then they're ready to go.
Yeah.
I don't have a specific audience. I'm still client, target market. I'm just trying to keep it. I'll probably keep it the similar format I've been going. I do have a lot of sport people on, or sport-related people.
Yeah.
Probably continue down that a little bit, but maybe detour a little bit else off the path, depending on where it takes me as well. I think I'll sort of react to what's happening within the environment and you know, the people I'm coming in contact with as well. So
it's crazy to see kind of like, I listened to four of your podcasts the last couple of days, and like the evolution of your podcast from episode one to the last one of the season. It's just like the way you carry yourself, and I mean, you're an easy guy to talk to anyway, right? So it's like, but asking the right questions, but making it comfortable. It's like, you're doing amazing stuff too. So that's great.
Well, I appreciate that. But I think that's a big learning thing. If any listeners are out there too, I wasn't a comfortable person in front of the camera. I like talking to people. I've always liked that. Yeah. But camera, like I wasn't even a social media person before a few years ago because it wasn't me. You know what I mean? Like I like to do my things and, you know, but, you know, I sort of overcame a few fears and self-doubt and self-talk, which was like, oh, really? Do people want to listen to me? Or I hate talking in front of the camera. And, and like you said, the first couple were probably not up to scratch, but I like having them there too because it shows people that, okay, you don't have to be perfect to start off with and you don't have to have everything to start off with. And, you know, every time you do one, you learn more.
Yeah.
You learn more from yourself of how to, you know, hold as a host, but also how to talk to the guests and the guests you're getting on to and the guests you want to have on as well. You know what I mean? Like, who are going to add value for my listeners and for everyone else and even to myself. Like, I always intrigued in hearing, you know, what, for example, what you've been through and how you've overcome it. And, and it's inspiring.
Yeah.
You know, it's really inspiring. So,
Well, it's, I mean, it's truly humbling to hear you say that. So thank you. But yeah, it's, I mean, it's a good space to work into. And I think everyone who's in it is, helping kind of break down the taboos of, you know, that's what Gus says, like we're reshaping what it is to be a man and to be a woman. Like you can't, 100%. Like being vulnerable and weak is almost the strongest thing a man can do now.
100%. Yeah. And it's creating those leaps and those opportunities and to putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
And I was one of those people who probably wouldn't want to put myself out there in an emotional sense too.
Yeah.
But I've done a lot of work on myself.
Yeah.
And that's why I think you have to do, you have to go through the process before you can start, you know, helping others as well.
Sure.
But I think acknowledging it at first and then, and I'm always improving and trying to improve. I'm never going to be perfect at it. But
I feel like that's a pretty kind of like the guests that we've had and, you know, like you, Mitch Woods, Rob Pisto, like you look at them and they're like, they seem to do everything really well, but you're always on a quest to learn more, whether it be about yourself or about others. And I think that's really one of the things that I've kind of taken on board was like, you know, just keep, there's so much to learn here and you can make such a big difference. Like, you change one person's life, like mission accomplished, right? Like that was.
And that's not your intention. No. It's just about being raw and honest and being vulnerable and wow, bang, it hits someone and it's stuck. It's like what Gus said about the, what if you tell someone else, don't worry alone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's, you share your story.
Yeah.
Someone else will have, not the same story, but they'll have something that will link or, you know, trigger something within them and go, oh, okay, maybe,
So, well, that's it. It's like everyone's story and path is different, but everyone is using a very similar path. Like they're touching, everyone's paths are touching in one way or another.
Definitely.
So, yeah, it's a cool space to be in. And, I think 2021, like we still don't know the end results of what COVID's going to do. And it's going to probably get worse before it gets better with kind of mental health. So I think, you know, again, Gus is doing another really good kind of thing now, check on a mate. Like that's one thing I like twice a week, I'll ring someone for no other reason, like not to organize a beer or anything, just to say g'day.
Yeah.
Cause I know what that feeling's like when I see a guy on my phone, like, oh shit, I haven't spoken to him for a while. What's he want?
Yeah.
But and then he doesn't want anything. It's just sick. It's
And some of those conversations are the best. I do it sometimes with a guy, mates, and I'm like, hey, how are you going? He's like, you're good. And they're thinking, oh, what excuse have I got? And then you just start going, no, it's just seeing how things are. And then it sort of just opens the gates of just free talk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just to be able to flow.
So. Yeah. Well, one of the guys, have you met Mick Miller from the?
Yes, I have.
So he
top bloke. Yeah.
So Mick Miller, for those of you listening at home, he's kind of Mitchell Woods is the meditation coach, his mentor. So kind of taught him a lot of stuff. And I one day, it was between the first and second course starting. I just got a call from a random number, and I'm like I said, I'm pretty good with my phone, and it's normally a work call. Hello, Nathan speaking. Brownie, it's Mick Miller. I'm like, got your number off Woody. He's Mick Miller's this little guy, just the best bloke. Yeah. He's like, mate, because he lives over, not in Scotland, no, he lives on one of the other islands of Pittwater. So I'm coming over, I can't remember. I'm coming over the mainland tomorrow. What are you doing? I was like, let's get lunch. So we had lunch up at Church Point. We ended up not eating and speaking for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
It was just a guy, a guy would never have met without this, right?
Exactly.
So same with you, same with Woodsy. Like, I knew Pisto is kind of the common thread that kind of got me involved in this kind of group of people, group of like-minded people, if you will. And that was just cool. We had a two-hour lunch and actually took a photo of and sent it to Woodsy saying, look, your two children are out to play. So
he would have loved
that. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we got to organise a man's lunch. So. Yeah. Yeah, man, it's a special space. So you're doing good stuff too. Nah, so, mate, awesome. I'm truly honoured to be here. So,
I want to finish off a couple of questions. Actually,
fire them at me.
No, last thing, actually, before I do that, I did notice on social media, and we did speak about it beforehand, a few months clean, smoking.
Yeah, 91 days today.
So, wow, how did that all start? Because I work with, in the hypno space, I also do work with clients with this. Smoking. So, I'm interested in, What made you decide to stop?
Mate, am I going to lose your clientele if I tell you how I did this?
No, go for it. Go for it. No,
oh, mate. Well, I've smoked since I was 18. Like, I was definitely more of a social drinking smoker for the first.
So you linked it to more drinking.
Yeah, and then the last couple of years, with my battles, I really smoked a lot. Like to the last kind of 12 to 15 months. Basically, when I got back from America, I started smoking a pack a day.
Yeah, okay.
Where I'm paying $50 for a pack of cigarettes instead of $10 for
a pack of cigarettes. It's an expensive habit, isn't it?
Man, well, good on Australia for pricing it out of the market. So that's the ultimate goal. And, you know, probably in 5 years' time, you'll be buying black market cigarettes. They'll be harder. They'll be more expensive than cocaine probably in 5 years' time. I'd given it a couple of cracks of quitting and I just kind of failed. Like 21 days I got to was my bet. And everyone said, you know, 21 days is the habit. And I had read a bunch of stuff and I was like, fuck, I just can't quite, I don't know what to do. And then I went and saw a nutritionist again, and part of this kind of voyage of self-discovery. And she said, mate, your liver is battered. And she said, like, good thing is the liver is the easiest thing to repair in your whole body until it isn't, and then all of a sudden it's gone. Then you don't have a liver, and she said, like, you need to just kind of have a bit of a break from whatever you're doing. And my resting heart rate was like, she actually had to measure my resting heart rate twice. She's like, you've just scored the highest stress levels and highest resting heart rate I've ever seen.
Which is something you don't want to have.
No, it's a fucking
That's not a good stat to have.
It's not a good stat to have. And just like, and by this stage, I'd actually had a really bad day at work. So I'm like a bit nervous about these tests because like I'm on heat right now.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, yeah, it's not good. And she's like, you know, can you have like, 60 days off the booze. 40 days. Can you do 40 days off the booze?
Yeah.
And you're going, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to quit cigarettes. I'm like, oh, that's pretty hard. And
I gather the way she delivered it to you was pretty like concerning.
Yeah. And so this was in September, I think, last year. And so I was like, so my mum's 60th was the weekend after the long weekend up at the Hunter Valley. So I'm like, this is my, like, I'm going to have a fucking, I'm going to smoke all the cigarettes and
big hit out.
I'm going to have a drink all the wine. So I was like,
you're going to have no throat in the morning. You'd be like,
So she's like, just give me 40 days off the booze and quit cigarettes. Yeah. So I'm like, all right,
I'll give it a go.
I thought health scare was kind of the thing. And like, my parents don't smoke. So I've never seen someone die of fucking smoking.
So you don't have that visual image.
So I don't have that. But then that was the kind of a rude shock. So I was like, this is the sign. I've just got to do it. So I put down the cigarettes after that weekend, and then the booze ban. I was just like, I'll just go 40 days. I should be too. I've done 3 months like once before. Yeah. So like, no, I can do it. Tough time of year to do it, but there's always an excuse.
Yeah, well, whatever time of the year, you're like,
there's something on this birthday. It's Christmas. Anzac Day. Easter. Whatever it might be. There's always an excuse. So I'm like, fuck it. So I got the 40 days and I was feeling good. So I ended up doing that for like 63 days. So that got me basically up to pretty much to Christmas, just before Christmas. I had a few beers over the Christmas break, but nothing too crazy. But just haven't haven't touched cigarette. I mean,
so you sort of just made a decision at that time and just, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And, I mean,
and do you crave it at all?
Oh, sometimes. Now at the moment, what I do is like, it was a big stress reliever for me. So yeah. What I do is if I'm a bit frustrated at work, I'll just go and pound the pavement and like I'll walk for half an hour, I'll smoke four cigarettes type thing. I'll do that a couple of times a day.
Yeah.
And then, you know, next thing you know, you smoke 25 cigarettes, whatever it might be. And then so I got some advice from a mate who quit, a long time smoker. He said, like, just slowly introduce the app, because I was worried about, like,
linking alcohol,
because I've never had alcohol and not had cigarettes. I've just, like, since I've been drinking.
Yeah.
And
hand in hand, really.
Your left foot, right foot type thing. And then so I kind of slowly introduced some alcohol back, and, you know, I had like half a dozen beers last Friday and just didn't really think about it. And then now, because I'm not smoking, none of my mates are smoking, and all of a sudden it's like,
well, it's less social now to smoke.
Yeah, it's hard to have a cigarette.
People are like, oh, it's social. And I'm like, but don't you have to isolate yourself and go away from everyone to do it? So how's that being more
social? They're making it harder and harder to do that. So, 91 days. Like, I can't sit here and say I'm never going to have another cigarette again. I think that you're setting yourself up for failure to do that. But, yeah, I got the health scare. That was a no secret formula to me. Like, it's hard. Like,
that's good.
I was definitely, like, eating a shit ton of, like, chocolate was, like, I was that first
craving something.
I was, that was kind of how I was supplementing. Like, it would be a fucking Mars bar instead of a cigarette type thing. So
what do you do now when you're under those stress situations and you sort of need to go and pound the pavers still?
I just pound the pavement without it.
And you're good with it?
Yeah, sweet. The meditation helps for sure. I think, like,
because it's interesting, a lot of time with people who smoke, and the reasons I hear always, it creates relaxation, less stress. But really, it's just giving it's that split second when you go, I can have a cigarette. You're giving yourself permission that you can just be relaxed and present. And it's funny, even if you didn't have a cigarette and you still just breathed, you allowed yourself to breathe, that's what calms you down. It's not the cigarette.
Yeah. It's
the breathing it's giving you permission, but also breathing at a level of, you know, and not, but you're just linking that. Yeah. That's just the link, you know, of a habit you've created.
Yeah, sure. And that's exactly what you and Mitch were talking about in your podcast with him. He says, just do this with me. Just do this, like, this quick, like, five breaths, relaxing. And that's exactly what he said to me. He said, like, that's the sensation of the cigarette. Like, do that. And I'd never really done that as such. But, I can just block it out now, and I enjoy the challenge now, because no one thought I could do it, and I must admit booze was always going to be easy to just kind of give it a break,
because you've done it before. You proved to yourself that
and, you know, like, you kind of feel like you sacrifice a bit of a social life with the booze and stuff and a bit of fun, but I don't think so. Like, I think it's been great, and I feel a million times better. I'm fitter and healthier, and like
smell,
but like just the look in your face, you know, like that's what Dee, the nutritionist, said. Like, you can't see it, but other people can see, like, the yellow hue around your eyes and stuff from all that nicotine you're putting in your body. And it was hard and still not easy, but it's like, it's a good challenge. I like it.
And the more longer it goes, the easier it will come.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, you're not getting.
Yeah. And what you use, so you have a couple of different methods to.
Yeah. You know, definitely.
Different strokes for different folks. Like,
with the smoking, it's quite structured. Most Marva sessions aren't, but it's a long 2.5 hour session. Yeah. But you're targeting the root cause. So we're finding out when, you know, what you've got linked in your unconscious to what, you know, what triggers you to smoke. Like, I had a client, she was 6 years old, didn't smoke, but her grandma was smoking out the back, parents were arguing out the front, so she went out the front. Like, I'm not, this is just a general thing, and went out the back and had the smell of smoke. So from that moment, she, in an unconscious or subconscious mindset, go, well, that creates safety within me.
Yeah, okay.
At 16, decide to smoke, and then, you know, you become a smoker. So what we do, we go back to that, go above it, take some learnings, you know, so you detach the emotions and the feelings towards that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the techniques. And then we do some regression. That's more regression work. And then we also do like a two futures, where you continue down the path you're going, and we try to relive it in a negative, like a month, 2 months, 3 months.
Yeah.
And you'll see yourself in that deathbed state or that, you know. and then your kids around you or your family, and they just, you know, and then we'll do it a positive. And so you can really see. And then also another technique, which is really powerful, but not just for smoking, is called a symbolic journey. Symbols come up. You get a symbol, and it has some meaning to you. And when you delve into it more and you're wondering what it gives you, instead of words trying to limit your thoughts, these symbols sort of endless, and it creates, you know, you. So many different ways. And then craving techniques, because you're craving it afterwards, because it's just a natural thing for a week or two as well. So, you know, always having water with you, drinking water is a really good substitution. You know, a piece of fruit or something healthy, a snack, because sometimes it's just that you know, being able to, you went straight to Mars bars or, you know, that's a natural thing. So if you start with that, if you had to, but if you didn't have to, you could put, you know, some nuts or some fruit. So just to substitute that. And then the other one's breathing, like three to five deep breaths. As soon as you start getting that craving
sensation.
And then another one is, what's the feeling or emotion below that? And ask yourself that, and just let it, and try and get to a straight line, or like a flat line, or a positive emotion. Because if you know, you know if you ask that question, you lay out and go, oh, okay, you know, oh, stress, oh, what's the emotion below that? And then it'd be nothing, or oh, you know, like relaxation, you know, like, so you
want content,
content, whatever it is, and you create that, and then all of a sudden you're giving that, Yeah, it's all different strategies, but with smoking, because it's such a specific thing, we just go on that, you know.
Yeah, it's a bit more textbooky.
Kind of thing in that way, where the others are linked. But a lot of times I've had clients who have smoked, but we haven't worked on that. We worked on other emotions, and it's still linked to that as well. Yeah. So it's an interesting space, you know what I mean? And it can work with so many different things well. But won't hold you up now. I really appreciate you coming on. Two questions.
Go.
So what gives you purpose?
I just try to be a better version of myself each day, I think. I think my kind of priorities and I guess life purpose and goals have kind of definitely readjusted in recent times. Like, I just met my partner, just moved in with me, so that's a big focus and love of mine, like kind of building a life with her. Yep. Still, work definitely used to consume me, so that that is no longer the case. I've kind of managed to separate work. So I think just being the best version of myself is
with a life balance.
So that, I'd say, but just being happy is probably, if that can be my purpose.
It's a great purpose.
Mate,
that's awesome.
And however that looks is kind of, I guess that changes from day to day, but just, I think I know if I'm the best version of myself, like, that's kind of, if I'm not happy, at least everyone else will be happy, but I think I'll be happy, so.
Yeah. Awesome. Last of all, favorite destination you've been to and you'd like to go to, and you're a man who's travelled a bit.
Hashtag humble brag. I think I've been to 30-odd countries. Actually, this answer surprises a lot of people. New Zealand.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I've been there and I do like that.
Which
part, north or south?
All of it. So I've been going there with work since 2005, and it's just, you know, beautiful country, beautiful people. Yeah. You know, I just laugh because it's like basically the laws there are 20 years behind. It's the action sports capital of the world, and you know, you can get away with a lot when we're over there filming for Nitro Circus and stuff. And they're just beautiful humans. And I think it's hard. I always get excited when I'm stepping off that plane, whether, you know, it be Auckland or down in Dunedin or wherever we might be going with the road. Least favorite, definitely Russia.
Yeah,
I had some pretty awful experiences. Russia, I wouldn't go there. Where would I want to go that I haven't been?
Yeah,
you know, if you asked me that 2 years ago, I would have said anywhere in South America.
Yeah,
but now
it's changed, hasn't it? Yeah,
now I've probably somewhere like Fiji and stuff. Never done anything up there. Like, I haven't really done too much of Asia, but Asia doesn't excite me because I sweat a lot and I don't really like the cuisine. So I don't need Bali or anything like that in my life. So, probably.
Do you prefer America or Europe or?
Yeah. Canada's sick. You don't hear too many Australians come back from Canada and say they've had a bad time.
Yep.
I mean, I was lucky. I got to see I think 40 odd states of the 51 states in America. So I just went to a lot of great. I've been very lucky with work. Like most of the places I've been to have been on work's dollar, and we've got to do the best things. Like
being able to experience.
Being able to experience like a lot of experience, like the general public can't even experience because we are, and I'm not, but the people, nice circus are celebrities. So, like with Saudi Arabia, like a lot of places I would never have gone had it not been for work. But I'd say you Fiji. Let's go Fiji.
Awesome. Yeah.
What about what's yours?
Oh, okay. Favorite I've been to?
Yeah.
I'd have to say New Zealand. Yes. There's something about New Zealand. I've only done the south, but I want to actually do a whole road trip around both, the whole thing, just really cruise and see it all. But it was just something about that whole environment. It was like nice and relaxed, but also adventurous, that you know, the outdoor, exploring so many different things.
Yeah, if you're an outdoorsman,
that's who I am. So and most of my holidays I do like to
go a bit of heli skiing and that type of thing.
Yeah, a bit of activity based type of stuff. That's relaxing for me. Yeah. Even though people are like, oh, you just want to, but you can do that a little bit, but I like to be moving and all that too. So I probably have a lot of energy to burn.
I think there's only a couple of places in the world where you can surf in the morning and snowboard in the afternoon and the South Island of New Zealand's one of them. Yeah. So it's a special place.
It is a special place, and I did like Fiji when I went there. That was really cool too. But because of the culture and getting in you know, experiencing that, I sort of made an effort to go out and see these, you know, these little villages and all that. Because I think it gives you a little bit more of a meaning and understanding of their culture and their environment. Place I'd probably want to go to, I want to do Maldives. I don't know why. It's just something about, like, you know, I just want to go around that area. I think that's another thing. And in Australia, too, where I still love, Hamilton Island.
Yeah, okay.
Just going up there, you feel like you're in your own little resort, and then going out to Barrier Reef, diving and all that too.
Yeah, I think the way the world is, we're only going to be able to explore Australia the next little amount of time. Yeah. I think for me in Australia, man, bloody hell. I got to go to Ayers Rock when I was like 22.
My brother did that, and he said it was amazing.
And it was one of the last years where you were still allowed to climb up it.
Oh.
And climbing up that rock, and we couldn't actually climb up the whole way because the metal chain that you used to use, that was like, you couldn't hold on to, like, you had your shirt off and were holding it, and then eventually got too hot still. So I think that was a pretty humbling experience, going to a pretty rad place like that.
Yeah,
like all that Kakadu, that straight shot down the middle of Australia is pretty.
That'd be cool.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah, actually, to do a road trip around Australia would be amazing.
Well, that's what everyone's got to do, man. Everyone's got to spend their money locally and support local businesses.
100%. That's what we get out there and do it all. Especially, I think, for the next year and a half, 2 years, I think that's the... But we've got so much to offer in our own backyard. Yeah, well, so why not just explore it?
So many people don't explore Australia first, and there's some of the best places in the world are in our backyard. Yeah. We both live on the northern beaches, so we know how lucky we are. We've always... No matter where I've been, anywhere in the world, like, nothing compares to this.
Yeah,
so. Stay out of here.
Yeah, we're still not allowing people in. Yeah.
The spit bridge is still permanently
up. Still
up.
Yeah. Since it came up just before Chrissy, it's not going back down. Yeah. But, mate, Nathan, thanks for coming on today. Really appreciate it. Sharing your story, sharing some, you know, some moments which probably weren't the highlights of your life, but it's also been great, you know, from your learnings and what you've come out of it, and the journey you've taken, and the people now you've created, and the space you're creating around this mental health and everything else. So I wish you all the best. And
man. Thanks
again.
Thanks, mate, for having me. And we're excited to get you on Skip This in a few weeks as well. I enjoy what you're doing as well, man. So keep up. Keep spreading the good word.
Likewise, mate.
Good man.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Vaughty.